I'm going to read to you from this book called The Light of the Bhagavat. Would you like to hear from this? Okay. Text number one. The arrival of clouds accompanied by thunder and flashes of lightning all over the sky produces a picture of life-giving hope. Covered by deep bluish clouds, the sky appears artificially dressed. The thunder and lightning within the clouds are signs of hope for a new way of life. Commentary. The serene sky, limitlessly expansive, is compared to the absolute truth. The living entities are truths manifested in relation with the modes of material nature. The deep bluish cloud covers only an insignificant portion of the limitless sky, and this fractional covering is compared to the quality of ignorance or forgetfulness of the real nature of the living being. A living entity is as pure as the limitless sky. He becomes covered by the cloud of forgetfulness, however, in his tendency for enjoying the material world. Because of this quality called tamas, ignorance, he considers himself different from the absolute whole and forgets his purity, which is like that of the clear sky. This forgetfulness gives rise to separation, separatism, and false ego. Thus, the forgetful living entities, individually and collectively, make sounds like thundering clouds. I am this. It is ours. Or it is mine. This mood of false separatism is called the quality of rajas, and it gives rise to a creative force for separate lordship over the mode of tamas. The flash of lightning is the only beam of hope that can lead one to the path of knowledge, and therefore it is compared to the mode of sattva, or goodness. The limitless sky, or the all-pervading absolute truth, Brahman, is non-different from the covered portion of the sky, but simultaneously the whole sky is different from the fractional portion that is liable to be covered by the dark cloud. The cloud accompanied by thunder and lightning cannot possibly cover the limitless sky. Therefore, the absolute truth, which is compared to the whole sky, is simultaneously one with the manifested living being and different from him. The living being is only a sample of the absolute truth and is prone to be covered by the circumstantial cloud of ignorance. There are two parties of philosophers, generally known as the monists and the dualists. The monist believes in the oneness of the absolute truth and the living entity, but the dualist believes in the separate identities of the living being and the absolute truth. Above these two classes of philosophers is the philosophy of achintya bheda bheda tattva, or the truth of simultaneous oneness and difference. This philosophy was propounded by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his explanation of the Vedanta Sutras. The Vedanta is the medium of philosophical interpretations, and thus the Vedanta cannot be the absolute property of any particular class of philosopher. A sincere seeker of the truth, absolute truth, is called a Vedantist. Veda means knowledge. Any department of knowledge is called a part of the Vedic knowledge, and Vedanta means the ultimate conclusion of all branches of knowledge. As philosophy is called the science of all sciences, Vedanta is the ultimate philosophy of all philosophical speculations. Do you like that? Yeah? What'd you like about it? Tell me one thing you liked about it, and I'll let you off the hook. Dr. Jonathan knows what he likes.
Krishna. Is it just me, or is it basically saying then that the Vedantas are just above science?
Is it just you, or is it?
Is that what I should be taking from it, that the Vedantas are above science? So we know it.
Are Vedantas above science?
So it was the very...
Well, the idea given, the Vedas is a body of infallible knowledge. It's infallible. It's called apurusheya. Means it's not given by any mundane intelligence of an ordinary person. It's not experimental knowledge, but it's knowledge which comes down through shruti or hearing. Whereas normally the scientific process begins with a hypothesis. And to prove the hypothesis or disprove it, one performs a number of experiments. And hopefully you come out with the right conclusion. So in terms of these two paradigms, we consider the process of gaining knowledge through superior authority to be the best process. By gathering knowledge through our senses, we're liable to be mistaken. Whereas by getting knowledge from an infallible source, which is the only way ultimately to get perfect knowledge, then we'll be rightly situated. So this is the process of the Vedas, through shruti praman, or hearing, taking evidence, hearing from an infallible source. Did that answer your question?
Yes, and that's definitely my favorite part of it, because especially hearing that it's passed down from Lord Chaitanya himself, it's just amazing the type of strength that has. And knowing how science is, you know, many years ago they thought letting blood out of your body actually helped you, and we've come to know that that's false, but knowing that something even older than 500 years is perfect and it's passed down perfectly to me is very nice.
Thank you. Anything else you liked? Yes, Rakshit liked something.
The point about the living entity being in ignorance because of its tendency to enjoy, and so because of that tendency to enjoy, its consciousness has got covered. And so it remains in ignorance. And in that state, then, it is very limited. It is now truly a conditioned living entity and is going to remain bound with the entanglements in the material world. But the main point being that because of that ignorance, the covering of that cloud, that's causing the living entity to be in that state.
Thank you very much. Nice point. What else did you like? There are three modes of material nature, which are goodness, passion, ignorance. Goodness is called sattvagun, passion is called rajas, and ignorance is called, and these are known as gunas. What does guna mean? Like rope. In what sense is it a rope? It ties you up. So Srimad Bhagavatam mentions that from the human platform, that sounds funny. From the having a human body, receiving a human body. What is a body? It's a fully equipped, with senses, five working senses, five knowledge gathering senses, grouped about the mind. From that body, we can make a regulation in life to cultivate various modes of nature. And the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Partivad dharano dumas tasmanagnis trayimayaha tamasastu rajastasmat satvanyad brahmadarshanam. in Vedic sacrifice, there's a way in which the fire is lit, and into the fire, the priest offers ghee and mantras. And this is a sacrificial offering to the tongue of Vishnu. From such sacrifice, one gains all good things. This is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter, that by performance of yajna, or sacrifice, then all the demigods are pleased. When the demigods are pleased, then they supply all the necessities to mankind. And also, Krishna says that he lives in yajna. One who performs yajna is in contact with Krishna. And in the example, the verse I just gave, Partivad Dharano Dumast, it's mentioned that the mode of ignorance is like the raw wood. And the mode of passion is like smoke. Smoke means that fire might come, but it's actually a disturbance. The fire isn't there yet, it's just smoke, so it disturbs. So the mode of ignorance is not so useful. Mode of passion is disturbing. And the mode of goodness is like fire. When fire comes forth, blazing fire, then one can perform Vedic sacrifice and attain benefit in life. So coming to Sattva-gun is a cultivation which is necessary in human life. And Sattvam Yad Brahmadarshana means that when one comes to Sattva-gun, or the mode of goodness, then one can have darshan of Brahman. One can understand one's higher nature. Here it's mentioned that we're a sample of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Upanishads mention that if you want to take a look and see what the nature of Brahman is, look at yourself. Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetrishu bharata kshetra kshetrajnaya jnanam yatach jnanam matambama. Krishna says, one who understands knowledge is one who knows the difference between the body and the knower of the body, and he calls the body a kshetra, or a field, where the soul lives. Like, you have to live somewhere, so most people, they live in a field of activity, or a field where they can grow things, a field where they can live. So we live in this field, which is the body, and we're different from the field. So one who sees that, and also sees that there's a supreme knower within the body, who's above even us, sees things as they are. This is knowledge, Krishna says. That's his opinion. Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetrishu bharata. So, by understanding ourself, that we're eternal, and seeing the nature of consciousness, for instance, Krishna says, consciousness is all pervading within this body, therefore we have feeling. And Krishna's consciousness is all-pervading within the universe. And he's the knower within every body, whereas I only know my particular body. But consciousness is above matter. Aparyamitastanyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat. Krishna says in the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that besides the material elements, the separated elements of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, there's a superior energy, which is the soul. And that superior energy is sometimes covered by those inferior elements because they're also controlled by the Supreme Himself, Krishna. So we can come under the control of those because we're small and we're subject to come under control of those inferior modes of nature. There's Yoga Maya and there's Maha Maya. Yoga Maya means Krishna's internal potency. And the more we come under the control of Krishna's internal potency, the more we come to know that we have nothing to do with this world, but we're actually eternally connected with Krishna. And the more we come under the control of Mahamaya, the more we think that we're a product of this material world, that we're subject to die in this body, and so forth. So, the process of hearing from the Vedas, especially from Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and practicing the transcendental process, especially through getting the instructions and singing the hymns, cures one of the disease, slackens the ropes, the gunas of the three modes of material nature, and allows us to experience our actual eternal self, which is beyond Maya, which is beyond matter. What else? Yes, please. Can you pass her the microphone? Is it your first time here? Thanks for coming. Where are you from?
From Dallas, Texas.
I just came from there yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I go to school in Indiana, and I'm actually here for a tournament because I'm on a sports team at school. So I just came here because I don't get the opportunity to.
Is the whole team in town?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So in our reading, text 52 of chapter 11,
yes.
Krishna says that even the demigods are ever seeking the opportunity to see his universal form. And that kind of reminds me of, I was listening to Brihad Bhagavatamrita the mm-hmm. other day, mm-hmm. and it talks about how Narad Muni, even Narada, is aspiring to see Krishna in his original Vrindavan pastimes. And I was just wondering how, if that's so, if even like a personal associate such as Narad Muni can't see Krishna in those pastimes, what, you know, kind of what hope is there for someone like, you know, me who might be really, you know, materially contaminated?
Well, actually, as we go deeper into the Vrindavan pastimes, we do find that Narada has such opportunities in Vrindavan. But each devotee, as is discussed in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, has a particular eternal disposition towards the Lord. And because of that, that devotee is satisfied in a particular kind of relationship with Krishna, or some with Narayan. And that, although they may be aware of different other relationships that other devotees have, they think the relationship I'm in with Krishna is the best. They feel like that. So Narada has a different kind of relationship. He's not one of the intimate devotees in Vrindavan pastimes, although there are instances in Vrindavan when Narada does, by Krishna's arrangement, come in and able to see those intimate pastimes in Vrindavan. But he's satisfied in his relationship. He's only, you know, curious to see those other relationships and to experience them with Krishna sometimes. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a discussion with Venkata Bhatta in South India, in speaking about Krishna's relationships with, or rather, Lakshmi's relationship with Narayan and her desire to enter into the rasa dance. And because she wasn't willing to follow exactly the path of the gopis of Vrindavan, that kind of experience was not available to her. This was mentioned by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Whereas the Munichari, the experts on Vedanta, who had been present during the time of Lord Ramachandra, when they saw Lord Ram, they particularly desired to have an intimate relationship with the Lord in Madhurya Ras, or a conjugal relationship. But they weren't able to because Ramachandra is not reciprocating with devotees in that way. He has one wife, and he's not like Krishna in that way. But he fulfilled their desires. In their next lifetime, they were able to take their birth into Krishna's pastimes. And they did follow in the footsteps of the gopis and perform their method. Aradya Bhagavan Rajesh Tanyas Taddama Vrindavana Ramya Katshirupasana Vrajavidu Vargena Vokalpita. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, there is no better method of devotional service than that which was conceived by the gopis of Vrindavan. And we read in the Upadeshamrita that the process ultimately for reaching that kind of devotional service is by following the footsteps of one of the residents of Vrindavan who's there. Of course, prematurely doing these kinds of things will not be fruitful. One must practice from the very beginning the process of sadhana bhakti, following the footsteps of the six Goswamis, performing hearing and chanting, and performing other services, especially to the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then one naturally can come to this position. How should you feel that certain devotees seem to not have access, but so what is my chance of having that? Well, you can see that by good fortune, you've come into a line of devotional service coming down from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radha and Krishna combined. And Bilvamangal Thakur sings in his Chandamrita that Prabodhananda Saraswati, rather, in his Chandamrita says that those who render service to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will very soon awaken pure love for Radha and Krishna within their heart. They'll enter into Vrindavan. What to speak of, as we all know from the song in Doyal Nitai Chaitanya, that Eshe Vrindaban Radhe Sham Pabe Darshan Kora Kripa Hole He, by the mercy of Lord Gauranga, one can enter into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna Vrindavan. Nayam Sukapo Bhagavan. The process of devotional service to Krishna, as exhibited by the members, by the residents of Vrindavan, if one follows that path, as passed down through the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, one has one is on that path. That is the path to reach that kind of devotional service. Nonetheless, even if someone like Sri Balabha, who is the brother of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taught those two brothers about the Krishna mantra, and then they encouraged their brother to also chant that mantra and enter into the same mood of service to Krishna in Vrindavan. And he agreed to take initiation into that mantra. All night he tried to chant. And then in the morning time, with tears in his eyes, he told them that I cannot do this. I cannot give up my devotion to Lord Raghunath, Lord Ramachandra, because I've sold my head at the feet of Lord Ramachandra and I can't give it up for anything. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard about this and he said, yes, this is his natural devotion. And glorious is that devotee who does not give up his master. So certain devotees have that particular mood, and even if offered the opportunity for a different relationship with Krishna, they're not eager for that. Is that all right? What is your name?
Darcy.
Nice to meet you. What team are you on? What sport do you play?
I'm a fencer for Notre Dame.
Fencer for Notre Dame. Nice. Next Sunday feast, you can do a demonstration here, maybe. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. What else? Yes, Manuel. And then Ramananda Saka.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
My question is, what is the difference on jhana, the difference, the jhana with the karma and with the prema bhakti, and how the gunas influence every those kinds?
Can you repeat your question?
What is the difference between jhana, karma, and prema bhakti?
Jnana, karma, and prema bhakti.
And how the gunas influence in those kinds.
And how the gunas influence those.
Yeah.
Well, if you're talking about jnana and karma or jnana yoga and karma yoga, that's two different things. So are you talking about jnana yoga, karma yoga, and bhakti yoga, prema bhakti? And how do the three modes of material nature influence those things? Srila Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavad Gita that there are different approaches for understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Some try to approach Him through the process of jnana or knowledge. Some through the process of karma, karma yoga. And then through bhakti yoga. But in Bhagavad Gita, we can understand that these are different rungs on the ladder. Karma and jnana are rungs on the ladder for coming ultimately to understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna says in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam jamanamante jnanavam mam prapadyate Vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlabha. After many, many births and deaths, one who comes to knowledge that I am everything, he surrenders unto me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He becomes the knower of everything. Bahunam jamanamante jnanavam mam prapadyate. So the jnanis are those who are speculating to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And generally they use the process which is called neti neti, or not this, not that, negation of all things that seem to be not the Supreme. Anyar evahur sambhavat, anyar ahura sambhavat, iti shushuma dhiranam yenas tadvich chakshade. The Sri Shapanishad said, one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and another result is obtained by worshipping that which is not supreme. So the jnanis are particularly occupied with using their own kind of speculative knowledge to understand that which is not supreme. Karmis are those who endeavor to enjoy in this material world by elevation. They're called elevationists. Whereas karma yogis are those who engage their work for Krishna. And by working for Krishna and giving up the fruits of their activity, they develop a sense of detachment and knowledge. Prabhupada gives an example or an analogy of a mirage. That when you see a mirage in the desert, and the karmi is one who endeavors to reach that mirage, thinking that it's real. Sometimes our animals in the desert, they keep running after that false water, and then they drop dead out of thirst. The jnanis are those who intelligently figure out that it's a mirage, and therefore they stop running for it. And the bhaktas, I mean, it doesn't do you any good if you stop running for the water because you still don't have water, right? Whereas the bhaktas are those who actually find where the real water is. So the path of jnana leads to an impersonal conception of the absolute because you're simply negating the material world. Whereas the path of bhakti, which can only come from the association of pure devotees, leads one to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And their relationship with the three modes of material nature, well, the three modes of material nature, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, affect everything and everyone in this material world. And to the degree that one is engaged in unmotivated and uninterrupted service to the Lord, one becomes purified and freed from these three kinds of qualities of the material world. And specifically, Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, this is achieved by service, devotional service. Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. He says that by engaging in constant devotional service without any other deviation of mind, then one rises above the three modes of material nature and comes to the level of Brahman. And those who, with the association of pure devotees engage in such devotional service, gradually develop their original pure love for Krishna. It's the nature of the soul to have love for Krishna. Nitya siddha Krishna prema sadhya kabunoi shravanadi shuddha chitte kare udoi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu invoked this verse, which says that we have this eternal relationship with Krishna. It's there already. We have a natural affection for Krishna within the heart, and it can be revived through the process of purification by hearing and chanting. Shravanadi shuddha chitte kare udoi. When one engages in that process and becomes purified, then one reawakens that propensity to love Krishna. And until one comes to that position of reviving one's original relationship with Krishna, then there's every chance that that person will fall down from the position that they've attained. Because ultimately there's no resting place for the soul except in ananda, and that requires a relationship with Krishna in pure love. So, to reiterate, these are all any kind of yoga. Jnana is weak, karma is weak. The only thing that's actually strong is bhakti. Therefore, the success of any process of yoga, whether it's jnana yoga or karma yoga, depends on how much bhakti is mixed into it. And those who take to the direct process of bhakti yoga very quickly come to the position above the three modes of material nature and can revive their original relationship with Krishna, which means love for God or prema bhakti. And that's the goal of life. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, prema pumarto mahan. The ultimate goal of life is to develop love for God, not to attain any kind of situation in this material world or even within the Brahman effulgence. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamai mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhakti rahaituki tvai. That he doesn't care for anything of this world. And he doesn't even care for liberation, but he simply cares to be engaged in the Lord's pure devotional service birth after birth. Okay? Hare Krishna. Ramananda Sakraprabhu.
You said something like by serving or pleasing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can get the mercy of Radha and Krishna. So how can one serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or how can one please Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?
We serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically by following in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami. We are known in our line as Rupanugas, or followers of Rupa Goswami. So one thing that you can do is study the teachings of Rupa Goswami from this book, as I think you've been doing. Because you just took your Bhakti Shastri exam, right? How'd you do? You did all right? Oh, okay. You must have some inkling how you did. Did you remember the verses? Okay. You probably aced it. So Rupa Goswami gives his instructions here. All of the teachings that Srila Prabhupada has given us are following in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami and the six Goswamis. They took direct instruction. Rupa and Sanatana took direct instruction from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he specifically empowered Rupa Goswami to present literature that everyone could follow and understand the process of pure devotional service. So you're in that line. So just keep doing it. Yes.
I'm sorry, I'll ask a more specific question. Following in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami is a very generic statement, but can you give us like a few specific things that one can do to
Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udarapasta vegam, itan vegam, yo vishaheta dhira, sarvam api mam prithavim sashishat. First, follow this injunction. Control the senses. The yogi, any process of yoga, one has to control the senses. And that requires practice and detachment. The mind, the senses, they're all like venomous serpents. But by practicing the process of devotional service and controlling the senses, one will gain determination to advance in devotional service. Otherwise, we are lighting a fire while pouring water on it. And then, of course, we have the instruction, Atyahara prayashascha prajalpo niyamagraha chana sangascha lolyam cha sadbir bhakti vrinashyati. There are six things which destroy your devotional service. Over-collecting. Prayashascha, and over-endeavor for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. Prajalpo, speaking unnecessarily. The tongue wants to say so many unnecessary things, so control the tongue. This is where you gain great ground by controlling the tongue. Atashi Krishna Nama Adi Nabhaved Grayam Indriya Sevamukhi Jivado Swayameva Spratyada. You want to know where to begin? Begin with controlling the tongue. Speak about Krishna, chant, especially increase the amount of chanting you do. The more you chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and listen to that sound, the more you'll advance in devotional service because you're directly associating with Krishna through the sound of the mantra. Prajalpo Niyamagraha means don't give up the rules and regulations, and also know why you're following them. Know what the purpose of them is. Study it. Understand how to follow them. Janashangas, Chalolyam Cha, give up the association of worldly-minded people. There's a lot of ways to associate with worldly-minded people. One of them is through sound vibration. If you listen to radio, if you listen to television, these kinds of things create impressions in the mind when they're coming from a source that is non-transcendental. So don't associate with worldly-minded people. And then, utsahan, be enthusiastic. Nishchayat daryat, be patient and determined. How determined must you be on the path of devotional service? I gave this example before I left for my road trip, but it was, if you were to pick out, I watched today at the wedding. How many of you went to the wedding today? We went to this wedding, and at one point they took a kusha straw, and they were taking one drop of water at a time, putting on the hand of the bride and the bridegroom, who were holding their hands together. And I was remembering this example, that one who wants to control the mind and senses to attain this success is compared, Jiva Goswami says, to draining the ocean with the tip of a kusha straw. You must be so determined that when you pick up that kusha straw and you approach the Pacific Ocean, I'm going to drain this ocean with this straw, that you don't waver. You say, whatever it takes, I'll drain it. And when you have that kind of determination, then very quickly you'll make advancement in devotional service. So determination, patience, enthusiasm, these are very important. And there are all kinds of activities that have been passed down to us. Especially, we always name these five, like hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, living in a sacred place like Mathura, performing Sankirtan, chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping the deity. These are activities following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. If you do those things regularly, tat-tat karma pravartana. Tat-tat karma pravartana, sangha tyagat satovrite, and associate with devotees. Shadbir bhakti prasiddhiti, you're guaranteed of success in advancing in devotional service. And then one of my favorites, dadati pratigrnati, kuyamakyati prachiti, bhunkte bojayate chaiva, shadvidim pratilakshanam. These exchanges of love between the devotees, giving gifts, accepting gifts, giving prasad, accepting prasad, revealing one's mind and confidence, hearing others reveal their mind and confidence. And then he says that we should learn to associate with devotees properly. Vishneti yasya giritam manasadriyeta dikshasti chet pranati bishta bhajantamisham shushu shaya bhajanam viknamananyamanya nindari shunya hridam ipsita sangalabhya. That there are different grades of devotees. Those who say Hare Krishna, we should offer obeisances within our mind. The person's not ordinary if they can say Hare Krishna. If someone takes up this chanting process of their life and soul and they take a vow to chant and they take initiation, then we should get down and offer obeisances to such a person. And then someone who's become very advanced and is nindari shunya, within their heart they have no more propensity to enviously criticize others. and they're very steady in devotional service, such a highly elevated devotee should be served, and one should seek out the association of such a person. These are all very specific things, guidelines that Rupa Goswami is giving how to advance in devotional service. Then he comes to the chanting. Syat Krishna nama charitari sitapta vidyapito patapta rasanasyana rochikan kintva varad anudilam kalasaiva justa svadvikramad bhavati tadgaramulahantri. That you can destroy the disease at its root by taking the medicine. And that medicine's chanting Hare Krishna. In the beginning, it may be bitter, just like medicine that you take when you have jaundice is sugarcane juice. It tastes bitter, but when you keep taking it, it destroys the disease. So similarly, keep chanting with that great determination that you have. And then gradually, love of God comes. And then he gives more advice. Tanama rupa charitari sukirtanana smrityo kramena rasana manasi niyoja tishtan raje tanaragi jananugami kalam nayeri akilamityu padesha saram. The essence of all advice is that you should organize your life around this kind of service so that you can always hear and chant about the Lord. And then in more advanced stages, you'll have a propensity to follow in the footsteps of a particular devotee in Vrindavan. In this way, you'll advance into the upper levels of it, of devotional service. Step by step, so begin with Vachovegam, Manasakrodavegam, control the mind, control the tongue, things like that. Is that specific enough? Okay. Hare Krishna. Yes, Sri Govinda Datto Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. We say parasashyam is over-enduring, so how can we understand about over-endeavoring about the services itself? Can we ever over-endeavor for serving Krishna also?
We can. We have if we have a basic diet of service that we need to do, and you can over-endeavor for things, for certain kinds of service. Building a big temple can become all-consuming. We've seen, someone become so absorbed in a certain kind of project that they give up their sadhana or something like that. They over-endeavor, become unbalanced. It's good. You should remain balanced in your devotional service. And that one rule is that no matter what you're doing, whatever kind of service you're doing, make sure that you cover the fundamentals every day. Don't sacrifice the fundamentals for some, really big service that you're going to do. It's big service to remain steady. And we've seen over the years that that's the biggest kind of thing. Once a devotee asked Prabhupada, how is it that so many big devotees are going away? Because this happens. People take to this process, devotional service, make advancement, and then they can leave. It's a legitimate question. Why are these big devotees leaving? Prabhupada said, big devotees don't leave. That's big. It's big if you do the fundamentals, actually. And then based on that overflow of what you have, then that kind of service is not over-endeavor. So remain balanced. That's advice in that. If you're maintaining your process of hearing and chanting, the fundamental process, and gaining a taste, it's good. I was just writing to someone today. There's a couple of new parties, Sankirtan parties, Montreal, Toronto, they were talking about. Someone was asking me a question. Oh, we're emphasizing in those parties about hearing and chanting. And that's by hearing and chanting, then we have the impetus to go out and distribute Krishna consciousness. And I was remembering and recounting to one of these devotees about how we had a small Sankirtan party in San Francisco, and we had come to meet Srila Prabhupada. And he was introducing us as, an enthusiastic party of book distributors and telling how we were doing. And Prabhupada's immediate response was, you must also read the books. They're not just for selling, they're for reading. So possible to over-endeavor if one gives up the process of hearing and chanting and thinks that I'll do something, you know, extraordinary. What's extraordinary is actually developing a taste for chanting Hare Krishna. That's extraordinary. Do that first, and then any other service that comes as a result of having that taste, that'll be big service. Is that all right? Okay. Hare Krishna. Yes, Vijendra Kumar.
This is regarding the light of Bhagavata.
Yes.
So, the light of Bhagavata, the shloka is there, the translation is there, and Prabhupada is, you know, giving a very philosophical understanding of the whole scene. Right? Like, when dark cloud is there, Prabhupada is saying that dark cloud means something, lightning is that means something. So, I have this question in mind that suppose someone else, if he reads the shloka and if he tries to explain the same things with different angle, saying this means another thing, this means another thing, then how to understand, like, how to see, you know, these philosophical explanations, different philosophical explanations for the same thing.
This light of the Bhagavats from the Srimad Bhagavatam. The shlokas are there. Descriptions of autumn is there in the Krishna book. And you'll see the verses are there. So, well, it just in general, anyone who comments on spiritual knowledge must be a liberated soul. And otherwise their commentary is not valuable. And so one should carefully understand when one's hearing spiritual knowledge what the source of that is, where that's coming from. There's a story of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada when he was traveling sometimes in different places around India. He'd come to a train stop and many people would come to greet him and they invite him, please come and meet our guru. And he would say, which line is he in? Who is his teacher? What's his lineage? What's Sampradaya? And if they'd say, oh no, Sampradaya, he's just self-effulgent teacher, he'd get back on the train and go. So, point is that Krishna is the guru, and those who are following the line of disciplic succession coming from Krishna, we take those kinds of commentaries to be valuable. So, discrimination is the better part of valor. And understanding. When you go to buy a diamond, you want to find out where it came from, who certified it, etc., before you buy it. Is that what you meant? Okay. Any other things? You have a? Yes, do you have a point? We give $100 for silly questions, but let me make sure I have $100 here first.
It's okay. I'm just curious.
Okay.
You know how Krishna is situated in everyone's heart? So, and we are a tiny little soul as well, situated in this body. Mm-hmm. So is Krishna situated inside our soul or next to our soul?
Let me see. No, it's a great question. Described in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna is in proximity to the soul in the area of the heart. This is what's described in Bhagavatam. And he's described as being the size of a thumb. Now, of course, that means that he has some physical size, so to speak, and if it's in the heart of an ant, then obviously he's smaller. And it's in the region of the heart. It's a spiritual region where the citta or the consciousness is generated. And described as two birds sitting on one tree from the Upanishads, that there's an eating bird and a witnessing bird. So Krishna is described as the witnessing bird, and we're the eating bird, trying to enjoy the fruits of the tree, the three modes of material nature. So there's different flavors of the fruits and things like that. So outside, but there's another place where it's described that Krishna can actually enter within the heart of the soul, because Krishna's greatness is not only in that he can become bigger than the biggest, but also smaller than the smallest, and the smallest is considered to be the soul. So he can actually become smaller than the soul and enter within the heart of the soul as well. So, Andantarasta Paramanu Chayantarastam Govindamadi Purushantam Mahamajami. Krishna is greater than the greatest, and he's smaller than the smallest, and he can enter within every particle, including within the heart of the soul. But it's described, Srimad Bhagavatam, that he's alongside the soul as a witness. All right? Okay. Yes, Rakshit Prabhu.
This was just a follow-up to that question and comment that if Krishna is in the proximity of the soul and is the size of the thumb, then he is considerably greater in size, it would seem, in that context, to the soul, because the soul, which you call to be a tiny particle, according to one of the Upanishads, is 1/10,000th the tip of a hair, and that it cannot be even seen by an electron microscope. Very, very, very tiny. So Krishna being the size of the thumb in proximity to it would be quite large, just an observation.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so we've heard from Bhagavad Gita. We heard the universal form chapter. We also heard something from the light of the Bhagavat, and some comments on the nectar of instruction, the Upadeshamrita. Does anybody have any burning questions? Then, final recommendation, follow the, just as to reiterate, the process of bhakti yoga begins with the tongue. Specifically, we recommend the process of chanting the mantra, the Maha Mantra, is extremely powerful. And anyone can chant it from any position, doesn't require initiation. You can chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra from whatever situation you're in now and begin to come to the transcendental platform. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Two particular ways of chanting. One is in kirtan, chanting out loud. If you gather with a group, you can either clap your hands and chant the Hare Krishna mantra or play with instrumentation. And this is a very powerful way of singing God's names and hearing them. You can gather a big group together or a small group and chant like that. And also japa, chanting silently to yourself. You can count the number of rounds that you chant on a rosary. Like the Prabhuji who just walked in, he can hold up your bead bag. You see, he's chanting japa. Oh, two devotees chanting japa in the back. Can you show us your beads? See that string of beads like this? If you don't have beads like this and you'd like to try chanting japa, you can see me afterwards, and we'll make sure that you get a string of beads and show you how to chant. But we recommend you start with a number. That's so you can count how many times you're chanting. There's 108 beads on each string. And if you chant 108 times all the way around, this is, you can count it as one round. And then if you go back the other way, it's two rounds. So we recommend that you start your own personal practice by chanting like this on beads. Those of you who don't have beads, come see me afterwards. If those beads are available, we'll make them available to you. I have some beads. They're also, you can buy them in the gift shop afterwards. If you get them from me, if you agree to chant at least one round a day, then I'll give them to you for free. Otherwise, it's $100 for the beads. They're a little cheaper in the gift shop. But that's a good way to start your spiritual practice. You'll notice right away, you can determine your own spiritual future by this process of chanting Hare Krishna, and then you can increase from there. And there are lots of different kinds of instructions of how to chant japa, and you can get those as you move forward. Hare Krishna. Now we'll have kirtan, an artik ceremony. So let's put away all the books and the book stands in as most efficient and rapid manner as possible. Put all the asanas away, then we'll stand up and we'll have the artik. Thank you.